So somebody on the text line from the 916, shout out to the 916. Somebody on the text line, we've been going back and forth about this. And on the drive home, I listen to the drive guys.
That's right.
Of course.
Everyone should.
And on the drive home, it sounded like Draper was on a different side than we were. And we can talk to him about in crosstalk. Won't be today because of the game, but the next time we have him. Because we had the conversation about Sabonis and about everybody at least once a day, at least one person saying, got to get that mid-range. He has to get that mid-range. Yeah. And I'm thinking, this man does so much for this team already.
Right.
It would be nice. I'm not saying it wouldn't be nice.
Right.
But now we have the conversation about whether you have touch or whether you don't, whether it's learned or not. We say the same thing when we compare it to speed. Can you go from being a 4-5 guy to a 4-2 guy or whatever it is? So the 916 is saying, this is why I constantly tell people to stop waiting for Sabonis to learn the mid-range jumper or a hook shot. He just doesn't have that touch.
Yeah.
He shoots the three better because he's usually so wide open and gets to set his feet.
Yep.
That's from Chris.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's spot on, 100%. I mean, he's left wide open on threes. You could see it. I mean, not only is it he sets his feet, I think the really important thing for when he spots up like that is he can line his hands up with the ball.
He got all the time in the world.
You literally see him like it's all about where everything is perfect. And I think that's why he's been able to knock down those threes so much. And it's the other thing is, I'm not saying, you know, if you watch Sabonis in warmups, I'm not saying he can't hit mid-range jumpers or he's incapable of doing it, but there's a really, really, really big difference between, hey, I can do this in warmups or just like, you know, whatever, we're shooting around, versus I can do this in real time, in game action, in high stakes opportunities.
Right.
Fourth quarter, I'm left wide open for a mid-range jumper. I know I've put in the work to hit it. That is a completely different thing. And Sabonis has taken major, major leaps from three. I think it's a sign that there's potential he could knock it down, or maybe there's not no hope that he could hit a mid-range jump shot. But just in terms of touch, I mean, we've seen how that floater looks. We've seen how Rashawn Holmes' floater looked. That little push shot looks a lot better, a lot more fluid, a lot more natural coming out of Rashawn Holmes' hands than Sabonis's, I'm gripping a grapefruit, let me kind of like shot put it at the rim. Like, that doesn't look natural, and I don't think, yeah, like maybe you can work on the touch of it and the rhythm and the muscle memory of it and all that stuff would definitely be great. But in terms of, oh yeah, Sabonis could make this into something that's actually a weapon for him, it might take a couple years to develop something like that. And at that point, who knows what gets lost in his game. And I think when we asked Whitey this question yesterday, his answer was kind of like what you said. Is he supposed to do everything? He's not a perfect player. No,
right.
De'Aaron Fox isn't a perfect player. There's only a couple guys that even would remotely fit into what you could classify as a perfect player. Yeah, Sabonis is going to have his warts. He shouldn't have to do a little bit of everything.
That's what I'm saying. I'd rather have a conversation. Oh, can you imagine if Sabonis had a mid-range jump shot? I'd rather say, oh, could you imagine if Keegan Murray continued his rise offensively?
Can you imagine if Keegan Murray could attack the rim?
Right.
That's a lot better of a conversation to me.
That's a lot more
productive. You know what happens if Keegan Murray attacks the rim? Not only does Keegan Murray start getting shots at the rim, people might condense. And what's the thing? Where's our bingo card for Mike Brown?
Spray threes.
Spray threes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be – that's a whole lot better than Sabonis hitting two mid-range jump shots in a game.
Right. Yes. It just feels like grasping at straws here. Because
you're
how many do you
blame
want?
Him. You're just
how many
trying to
do
blame
you want
Sabonis.
Him to shoot?
That's it. Exactly.
How many
exactly.
do you want? This guy's a double-double machine.
Like a half three a game. You know, like it's every other game he takes a single three. What are we talking about with a mid-range? Like,
no.
To your point, again, he's maybe going to take one, maybe two a game.
Yeah.
And is that making or breaking the Kings season?
I'd rather talk about a second-year player in Keegan Murray and what he can do to be better offensively. I'd rather talk about however many-year player in Harrison Barnes and what he can do offensively.
How does Sabonis get better at free throws? Focus on that.
I'm good with that.
You know, yeah, that's cool. That's productive. I could see how that would really impact the game. Gets to the line 10 times a game.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if he makes 8 of them, that helps the team a lot more than hitting one or two mid-range jump shots.
Yeah, and I understand why people say it, and I think part of this is that it's so fresh on everybody's mind because of what happened.
Of course, the Looney thing.
Yeah. Yes, with the Looney thing. But if you still look at what happened there and then look at how poorly Keegan shot at the beginning of that series,
and
along
Herter.
With Kevin Herter, we're not having a conversation about Sabonis and his lack of mid-range jump shots.
Yeah, no, we're talking, because if Kevin Herter and Keegan hit those shots, they're not going to sag off Sabonis. They're going to attack. They're going to say, hey, we need to make sure Kevon Looney is up on that screen so that he can meet them on the other side of it. But no, since Kevin and Keegan missed all their shots, it was okay with just letting those guys shoot, and they just continually missed. And so that allowed Looney to take some steps back, and Sabonis wasn't as big of a factor in playmaking as what he was during the regular season. I don't think that's a Sabonis problem. Sure, he can help himself by hitting a couple free throws, but a couple mid-ranges. But at the end of the day, like I think that he can improve other aspects of his game that would go a lot further in terms of helping these guys be better and be more of a dangerous team.
Yeah, and the bottom line is that he's just, again, there's not a perfect player. I remember, and speaking of the Warriors taking on the Mavericks tonight, I remember seeing a clip of Draymond at a camp, and he basically told these kids at a camp, he said, there's basically one or two guys on the floor per team that get to do whatever they want.
Right.
Everybody else has a job to do.
Mm-hmm. Role players.
Are essentially role players, maybe different levels, but role players. Looking at this lineup, you have a De'Aaron Fox, and I wouldn't say Sabonis, right? I'd even say maybe next season, hopefully that person's Keegan Murray.
Yeah.
Right? But De'Aaron is your guy. Maybe you have one more that kind of just is, all right, we're just doing whatever.
Probably Malik.
Everybody else is there to play a certain role. Yeah. And when you look at who Sabonis is, he plays that role to the highest level.
Yes. Yes.
He's not one of those guys, the one to two guys that can do whatever he wants on the floor.
No, yeah. He's there to serve a purpose, and that's a great way of looking at it. He is the world's best role player in the most complimentary way possible. He is there to make everything else work. And he understands that, sure, I could complain and say, why don't we post me up 10 times a game and let me go to work? But instead, he understands that this is just how this is going to be best, not for me, but for everybody. And yeah, it does pull me away from the paint where I'm probably most effective, but in the name of getting my other teammates involved, I'll figure the rest out because it's just so much more important to have those other guys going than what Sabonis has. And that's a major, major sacrifice that I don't think is talked about enough. Like, you don't really see other centers pulling out and playing on the perimeter as much as Sabonis does. And he does that because he's trying to get open looks for his teammates and he's not thinking about himself. So it's a bit unfair to try and, hold Sabonis to this. He is an all NBA player, but it's ridiculous to say he needs to be able to do everything out there, because I would push back and say, I think it's a lot more important for De'Aaron to hit threes than Sabonis to hit mid ranges. He can't do it all.
Yeah. And I get why it is a bit confusing. And again, it's glaring because of what happened last season. But if you put it in perspective, Sabonis is doing plenty.
Plenty.
He is doing.
Shoulder,
thank
shoulder,
you.
Come on.
He is
and
doing.
And he's setting the physicality to that point.
That's right. That's right. He sets the tone.
Yeah. I see somebody on SackJack calling this team soft. I would think without Sabonis, people probably would think this team is soft.
They would be much more finesse.
Yeah.
That is for sure. Brandon Ayuk, he used a little bit of finesse while he was on the nightcap with Uncle Shay, as they call him. And I believe Ocho Cinco is on that show too. And if real quick, if you've ever seen people do impressions of that show,
I never have.
They're hilarious.
Really?
They're hilarious. And here is Brandon Ayuk. He was talking about the contract extension and whether or not he's worried about the future of his time with the Niners.
They trying to get work done.
That's all I can say.
Y'all know how it gets. I don't even want to get too far into that. I'm just trying to get like what Ocho just said. I'm trying to I'm trying to get what I deserve. I felt like this season playing football, I figured out who I was as a person, as a player, what I bring to the table, what I bring to the locker room, what I bring to organization, and just the value I hold when I walk in that building, because people gonna follow me because I've done it the right way since I've been in that building from the first day I walked in there to when I was in there earlier this morning, done it the right way. So, and if they don't see it worth in that, that's all it is. That's all it is. It ain't nothing else besides that. But I can't get into it. We got professionals working on both sides, so hopefully we can come to a professional agreement and continue to play professional football.
For those of you who haven't seen the clip or the video of that, when he says if they're not there or something to that effect, he makes a walking sign with his fingers saying that he will walk. Now, he's under contract.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Brandon Ayuk, to me, when I heard that clip, he's feeling himself a little bit.
He is. He really is. Like, and especially at the end there, like, he did not say play for the 49ers once. He just said, like, I'm trying to get all this squared away so I can play professional football.
Yeah.
Like, to me, there's not a lot of specifically saying, like, hey, this organization drafted me, I love what I built here, none of that stuff, which, you know, I guess maybe from a negotiation standpoint, he shouldn't be saying, because that does give a little bit of leverage to the Niners. He's got to keep his side of the street as, I guess, as messy as possible, not necessarily as clean. Mm-hmm. It was definitely something there. Him being as vocal as he has been, which also credit to him. I think a lot of people would be afraid. I mean, not that he's going out there and releasing all the tea, but he's been really forward about what he wants. And I think ultimately it's going to get him what he wants. And I guess we'll just figure out what it is truly. What is he aiming for here? Is he aiming for respect and for money, or is he aiming to truly just get out of there?
And if not, I'm doing finger walking as well. All right, when we return, Malik Monk, should he still win Sixth Man of the Year? Also, we see you on the line, Ashley, still talking Sabonis. Does he have to – what do you guys want him to do, huh? He needs a mid-range. He's got to do the dishes.
He's got to start drawing up some plays,
right? You want him serving popcorn during the games, too?
I noticed some jerseys were pretty dirty.
There you go. You know? You want him to do the laundry, too?
Can he light
too?
The beam, too?
Can you light the beam?
Yeah, literally go upstairs and
every
light
time.
It.
Come on now. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. From amid rock on the Sack Chat, Sabonis needs to wipe the sweat off the floor.
I guess, man. I mean, he puts it there, so, you know, I guess he should clean it, too. And then, you know, yeah, maybe he should also run over and take Scott Moak's mic and say, you know, coming in is number 15, Davion Mitchell. Like, you should just do it all.
It's crazy because I do understand. I understand why people... It's not even that I think it's a crazy statement. You always want to improve your game, right?
Yeah.
It just comes up too much to me.
Yeah.
I think other things should come up before it. I'm not saying it would be nice. And maybe it's somewhere on the priority list, but as far as the Kings getting better, but it's not that high. I got about five things ahead of that before Sabonis and his mid-range jump shots and willingness to shoot.
I thought the mid-range was dead also. I was told that the mid-range game was dead.
So, yeah.
You know, I'm okay if he continues to work on his three-point game. I think that there is value in stretching the floor that much. But in terms of mid-range, like, mid-range shots are pretty exclusive for guys like De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk and, you know, Kawhi Leonard. And are you sensing a theme here? Like, the best scorers in the NBA – score from the mid-range really only in isolation. The only time Sabonis is ever going to take a mid-range jump shot is if it's just a situation where it's a three but closer. And I mean that to say, like, if he's left quite literally wide open and he has time to set everything, then sure, yeah, he can take mid-range jump shots. But there will never be a situation in which Domantas Sabonis is just going to straight up, you know, size somebody up, go between his legs, and then pull up for a mid-range shot. Maybe you can say he needs to work on his post-turnarounds, which I would be willing to listen to. He's short-armed quite a bit of those. But in terms of just a straight-up, stand-up, face-up mid-range game, I just don't think that there's much of a place for that in the NBA today unless you're Anthony Davis.
Yeah, and Anthony Davis is not a center.
And he's not.
According to him, he is not a center. Let's get to Ashley, who wants to be a part of the conversation, 916-339-1140. What's up, Ashley? What you got for us?
So as far as Sabonis goes, I honestly, that's too low on the laundry list of things we need to get done. I actually got a hot take, though, and that the Kings are right where we want to be in the sense that we're right in the thick of that fight for the playoffs, you know. And right now we're kind of going out and hunting teams, you know. We're kind of, in a way, the hunted of the playoffs. And I think that's good because it puts the Kings in a state of mind of being ready to play and getting up for the game. But not only that, we have the rest advantage tonight against the Clippers. Kawhi's out. So, and in terms of injuries, all that, they're missing guys too. And I think that we're just in a really great spot. They play, not only that, the Pelicans play the Magic tomorrow. That's going to be a tough game. If we can take care of tonight and against the Knicks, we're going to be in a really great spot.
Thanks for the call, as always, Ashley. Yeah, it's definitely a more comfortable spot for the Kings, right? I mean, I think last season was such a whirlwind of just good vibes and no injuries. And this was the year where they were going to have some expectations. They did have some expectations heading into the season. Nobody saw the Thunder doing this. Nobody knew what to do with the Minnesota Timberwolves. So those two spots, when we had this conversation, I think I had the Timberwolves in the top three, but I did not have the Thunder in the top three. So the Thunder come in, they take a spot. The Timberwolves, they take a spot. Obviously, we knew the Nuggets were going to be there. It was a matter of where were the Kings going to fall. And honestly, a lot of these people nationally, they want to have it both ways, right? And they want to say that the Kings didn't reach expectations. But at the same time, well, I thought you said last season was a fluke because of the injuries. So you can't have it both ways. And to Ashley's point, now with really the overused sports term of house money thing, it is true. Right now, it's house money in that, you're missing one of your top three scoring options, and it's going to be really hard to have a deep run outside of that. But you're not playing with house money because you still got De'Aaron Fox and you still got Domantas Sabonis. And if you do want respect, you can't just lay down.
Yeah, I mean, those two guys, more than anybody, I mean, we clamor for that. Why weren't they all-stars? Why aren't they all? Well, now is a great stage and a great opportunity. Like you said, I mean, view this time as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Now is, you know, you can forget everything. You're in the situation you're in right now. We can harp on how you got here all you want. But the fact remains that there is a clear opportunity in front of you to really show something. Sabonis, you can quiet a lot of people who we all know, though that's been a very, very loud portion of people that have criticized Sabonis. But De'Aaron Fox, he's got a lot of questions to answer. And I think, you know, this is a great opportunity to step up and show, you know, Shea had a great season. No shade at anything OKC did, but De'Aaron Fox is at that level. And, and this is an opportunity to show, my team just hasn't needed me to really put the team on my back. Now they do, and here's what it looks like when that's the case. Again, it's not a month. It's not 2 months. It's not an entire season that they have to do this. We're talking 8 games. So if you can't put together 8 games of looking like you guys have two all-NBA caliber players, then I don't know. Again, that's where we might need to come summer have a conversation about what truly is what we have versus what we might have thought we had. But I think that this is a great opportunity for these guys to show out. There's nothing but clear runway in front of them. There's nothing stopping them except for themselves. I think that they're both more than able to take this opportunity and run with it. But man, I mean, with how this season has gone so far, it wouldn't surprise me if expectations aren't met yet again. And maybe they do still continue to look inconsistent. And it is a night-to-night basis. I feel like they're past that. I think at this point, you have to feel the pressure if you're those two. But, you know, we'll just have to see tonight, man. Today is definitely a really big game just for getting things in the right direction.
With Malik Monk being out and Kevin Huerter being out, do you still expect them to make the playoffs? The playoffs, not the play-in, the playoffs.
expect probably not, but
do you think they should?
Probably not. Probably not. But I'm not saying they won't.
Sure.
I wouldn't surprise. Like, I think it's like a 55-45 kind of thing.
Basically, missing Kevin Herter and Malik Monk is enough to make you feel like, all right, that's a lot. That's a little bit too much to overcome.
And I'm not saying obviously fall out of the 10, but in that
No. I'm saying they don't get it. They get into the play-in. Mm-hmm. They either lose two games as a 7 or 8 seed, or they lose one game as a 9 or 10.
Yeah. No, definitely. I would say that the odds probably say not, and a lot of that is to the quality. Like, playing Phoenix and then having to play L.A., Golden State, or Houston, those guys are no scrubs, and a lot of those teams are a lot more healthy than you are at this point in the season. So I think it's a good excuse, but again, like, I'm not saying it's a definite. It's just the cards that if everyone's looking at their hand right now and it's a game of poker, I don't think the Kings have the best hand of everybody at the table.
Yeah. It stinks simply because the whole season comes down to this.
It does.
It's just terrible timing.
100%. All
terrible timing. But if you're, even if you're Vivek, right, in his mind, is he thinking, all right, get into the play-in. Hopefully we get a home play-in game. Yep. And we got a lot of work to do this summer.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, yeah. I mean, there's a lot that's riding on this end of the season because, yeah, just the way that we feel about this team in the immediate and also in the long term, a lot of things will be determined by these next 8 games. And it's super unfortunate that the Kings have put themselves in this kind of situation to where, yeah, they haven't given themselves any leeway. They don't have any games to play with at this point in the season. They're already in a worse position than what anybody would have wanted them to be in. I mean, there's definitely a good shot that things, you know, I would say there's, like I said, I think there's probably like a 55% chance that this thing doesn't go how everyone wants it to go. But saying that, you still, like you said, you still have Fox and Sabonis. You still have things there that you can get it done with. And just because the odds are stacked against you doesn't mean you can't do it. You can go out there and you can, I don't want to say shock the world because you're shocking the world to get an 8 seed or a 7 seed, but you can really do what no one is expecting you to do. And, you know, I do think that that still would mean something. If the Kings go 5-3 the rest of the way, I think that's good enough to maybe tell people like, hey, we thought this Kings team was down and out, but Fox and Sabonis, those are two guys that you're going to have to deal with, and that's not going to be an easy out, but it's all up to them and how they carry themselves the rest of this way. But again, it starts tonight.
5-3. You get to 5-3, and you probably have a good enough amount of momentum to get out of the play-in. That's how I feel.
I would think so.
5-3, you give yourself 2 chances.
That's 7-8, yeah. You have to land in that 7-8.
And if you get, 5-3 probably gets you the 7, then you get 2 home games.
Yes, that'd be huge. That would be huge.
2 home games. And
that's the optimistic best case.
From ownership, that would be nice too.
That would be very nice.
That would be very nice too.
Very nice. 2 extra games.
Continuing the, and then if you do win that second one and you get into playoffs, then you get those
2
games.
More.
Then you get 2 more.
4 playoff games.
Continuing the Kings
Pirate
conversation.
Budget.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. A lot of ribeye coming at you after that. Styles and Watkins, when we return, we get the injury report. We also talk Malik Monk. Does he still deserve to win 6th Man of the Year? Then, 145, prop talk and dog segment. Styles and Watkins, Sackdown Sports. A little bit of the A's drama on the court, or excuse me, on the field, and something is going on where Estuary Ruiz, who was balling, right?
And on my fantasy baseball team.
To be fair, only 7 at-bats.
Yeah.
But this past weekend or this past series, he had 429.
Yep.
Right? So he played very well. And as you know, the A's, I don't know if they have won a game? Or I think they won a game because of him.
Yes, yes.
I think he helped
really?
In that win.
Oh my gosh.
So all of a sudden.
What are you doing?
So all of a sudden, he gets demoted now back to AAA on a team that is not very good. And there is essentially a rumor or feeling that
a theory
that it was because he was repping with a wristband last dive bar, which is a bar that is not not cool with the A's. They're A's fans, but they it's been very contentious, right? So this is from Big Bob's Cards. Here's a hilarious MLB conspiracy theory for you. Last Dive Bar is an online store that describes itself as a premier online store for unique and stylish apparel that celebrates the iconic Oakland Coliseum. Go to the website and you'll see that their apparel seems to have a central theme. Their homepage features shirts and hoodies that read boycott and sell the team. There's also a shirt depicting A's owner John Fisher playing with the puppet that resembles A's president Dave Cavill. Last Dive Bar hosts yearly Fans Fest that is openly anti-ownership. And if you remember from a couple, when was that? About a month ago or maybe a little bit longer than that, there was the issue with the A's getting the sponsors to pull out of that, so there were no beverages there. Now, back to Big Bob's Cards. Now, the fun part, their Twitter account tweeted a picture of four A's players wearing their wristbands. And here are the players. Estuary Ruiz was demoted. Brent Rooker was benched.
They're all-star last year, by the way.
Yes. Christian Pache was traded. And James Caprillion was released. Chris, you know I love conspiracy theories. Yeah. Are you buying this?
It's tough not to. I mean, at the very least, we know that the A's aren't trying to win games, and the fact that they, you know, demote Estuary Ruiz, who had, what, 60-plus stolen bases last year.
He can fly.
Is probably, if you are at all caring about going to the A's games and hoping for some excitement from the A's side.
It's like, literally major league.
He's probably going to provide the minimal amount of excitement that you might get from the A's. So I would say it's definitely not a coincidence that this is somebody who's played well and is sitting. I think it's interesting that Brett Rooker, again, who is their all-star from last year, is also benched this year. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. Not that I'm following the A's, you know, super, super closely in terms of their day-to-day movement, but doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. I'm going to buy it. I'm definitely going to buy it because this organization has done a lot worse, and I would not put this beneath them. This definitely feels like something that they would do to try and prove a message and say, hey, you know, we see this stuff and we still are in charge. And if you're going to actively be against us, well, then we're going to affect your career, which is totally like a great way to handle your business. Right.
I don't want to believe this.
Oh, I mean, I can't. I mean, again, I'm not following the A's every single day. Their ins and outs of, you know, and from what I understand, too, there's a little bit of controversy because I guess Mark Kotze went on or didn't go on, but had his press conference after and was asked about it and essentially said, you know, he really was only up with the team because we had some injuries and XYZ. So maybe that is true. But at the same time, this is somebody who was a big member of your ball club the entirety of last year. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to option him down to AAA and kind of do it. I think Kotze essentially was trying to frame it in the sense of, we want you to go down there and dominate. We know that you're a good player. This is just to kind of keep you in form. And, you know, again, your win plus minus is 62 games or whatever. Like, I don't really think you should be playing with the couple guys who actually make sense to be on an MLB roster.
I don't get that.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, you're supposed to be the baseball guy. You tell me what is going on.
Well, I just...
Because it doesn't make any sense
to me. it doesn't. And again, it almost feels like that movie Major League, where they're literally doing everything they can to make sure that A's fans do not have an enjoyable experience. Yeah. I don't understand that. And the reasoning behind it, guys go up and guys go down. We get all that. But when you're looking at this lineup and it's a bunch of dudes that you haven't really heard of besides J.D. Davis, in the one win that the A's have, in that game, Estuary Ruiz was 2-for-4 with 2 runs scored.
Oh.
And they won by
what
one run.
Being so productive.
They won 4-3.
How many runs do the A's have this year?
When is the next time the A's are going to be in the news? And by the way, I think that, what was it last year with all the record, all the errors that they committed?
Oh, I was going to say.
Or yesterday?
I just saw a tweet that said the A's have 13 errors already this season.
The A's have
How many games have they played?
Yeah, this is from Brody Brazil. The A's have made more errors, 13, than they've scored runs, 11, through five games.
There we go. And you know what? I will say, I've had plenty of conversation with many A's fans who live in Sacramento and who live in Oakland or have lived in Oakland. And that's a really big counterpoint that they have thrown at me for this whole situation is, Sacramento, do you really want the A's?
Mm.
Like, I know it's still a Major League Baseball team, but this is not going to be fun to watch. You will go exclusively for the overall experience and for the other team. So, you know, when this whole, you know, process comes out, yeah, the initial headline of Sacramento gets a Major League Baseball team might sound like a really awesome thing, but I don't think these kind of things are going to change in the next 3 years. I don't think that they're going to build towards something before they go to Vegas. I would imagine that at least for two of these next couple years, this is going to be pretty much what the standard is for this team. I don't think there's going to be some major turnaround. Also, to add to the conspiracy, my friends who are A's fans sent this to me yesterday. Apparently, who they brought up when they optioned Estruy Ruiz was Tyler Nevin, whose dad, Phil, played with Mark Kotze in San Diego. So just to kind of add
that makes stuff like that happens all the time.
Yes, exactly.
Right? We see dudes get drafted. Here's what's crazy, to your point. You know how many games Estruy Ruiz played in the big leagues last season?
I would imagine like 100.
132. 132 games.
So he was good enough for all that? But just can't find can't find a spot for a guy who steals 65 plus bases.
He's so housewives coded. I just know it.
As you know, as my mom always used to say, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Exactly.
916-339-1140. Let's get out to Garrett, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, Garrett? What you got for us?
Oh man. I've been an A's fan my entire life. I'm 37 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the biggest joke that this franchise has been these last couple years. John Fisher is such a terrible owner. This 100% was a call from the owner. Hey, let's send this guy down because he's repping this bracelet or wristband, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Brent Rooker sitting, Estruy Ruiz being sent down. Absolute garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a slap in the face to a loyal fan base. It pisses me off that the A's keep doing this. And the fact that Mark Kotze is still the manager, I mean, blows my mind. Their pitching coach, who I can't remember his name right now for the life of me. I can't stand him. He looks like Carmichael Dave, which is hilarious.
I understand why you couldn't stand him then. That makes sense.
But I cannot. He is the worst pitching coach in the history of the MLB. He never made it past, I think, double A baseball.
Scott Emerson,
yes. God, I cannot stand him. Biggest joke. Ever since he's been there, our pitching has been a joke. This whole team needs to just be wiped. Front office, management, the owner needs to sell. I could go on and on, but I'll take your comments out there.
No, thanks for the call, Garrett. And Chris is looking up Scott Emerson, and Chris is cracking up.
Tell me
now.
This is not Carmichael Dave. That's Carmichael. That is a side profile of Carmichael Dave right there.
I wonder if he's ever heard that before.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have found we've got him. We've got him. Scott Emerson, Carmichael Dave.
That's why he's so in the loop on everything going on. It makes so much sense
now. We've gotten to the bottom of it. We've figured it out.
Garrett, you know, really feel for you and all the A's fans out there. It doesn't make any sense. And again, they're actively, it's almost like they're trying to get rid of all the old fans to get new fans in 3 years. But that's just not how that works. And I don't know, as far as brands are concerned, this is a terrible brand. And if you continue to damage it, by the time you get to Vegas, if you go to Vegas, nobody's going to want anything to do with you. And you were going to fought so hard to keep that A's logo. You didn't want to give it up and give Oakland the rights to it, but you're going to fight so hard to keep it and then go to Vegas, and it's going to be tainted. it's already tainted. So it makes absolutely no sense. When we return, prop talk and dog segment. Let's get that free cheese. Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Simone, what did you think, Simone? Did you hear the Beyonce?
Of course.
Country album?
I was actually out on Friday. I don't know if you have.
You were in
these
streets? Simone was in these streets.
Had some corresponding time off. No,
wow.
I'm just kidding.
Cowboy Carter, you're into it or
it
what?
It's amazing. Yeah, of course. She's going to be reclaiming all these different genres of music, and I can't wait.
But don't forget, this is not a country album. This is
Beyonce album.
Yes, it's a Beyonce album. Mm. Chris, have you heard yet?
I have not. I've only heard the single that came out.
This Ain't Texas.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the single, but I'm sure the album's going to be fire.
It's all, it's very, it's different, but also the bones are still Beyonce.
Now, what is this you said about this isn't a country album, this is Beyonce doing country? Is that what she
said? I think
said?
The term was, this is not a country album, this is a Beyonce album.
That's her line.
With, it. I guess, country roots. Okay.
That makes me feel like that's big, like Drake when he dropped, I think, More Life. He was like, this isn't an album, it's a playlist.
It's a playlist, yes. Okay. Well, it was perfect because, we went back to the East Bay for Easter. So we had about an hour and a half to just play the whole thing. The whole thing through. All right. Well, sounds like that one is a winner. And hopefully we pick some winners tonight.
Hopefully.
It's time for Prop Talk. Chris is nervous today.
I'm so nervous.
You got to change your energy.
I just
not about the game or about your prop.
It's I feel like it's more about my prop. Like I just kind of took a glance at all the props and
no, they're not great.
None of them are. Yeah.
Basically,
no
with Malik Monk out, everyone has been
do better.
Everybody has been boosted up a little bit, and it's a bit worrisome.
Yeah, I was hoping maybe there'd be some Trey Lyles thing in there, maybe a Duarte sprinkled in there, maybe a Harrison Barnes high fives or something with his teammate award.
Well, I'm going to change up the swag right now.
Do it.
And I'm going to go with a number that you said coincides with a lot of the Kings' success.
Okay.
De'Aaron Fox, 6.5 assists.
Ooh, that's a great one.
Because you said 7.
Yes,
you said when they get to 7, they do well.
They've only
so I'm
lost
going
3 games.
De'Aaron Fox over 6.5 assists.
Wow.
Ooh, my prop is also going to be incorporating some of those Frankie facts that we were utilizing.
Nice.
I believe that sweet number was 35,
I'm
not mistaken.
35%.
So with that, I haven't gotten to speak about Trey Lyles in a long time.
Come on
He's
now.
Sitting at 1.5, so give me that over. He's going to be making 3 threes tonight.
Nice.
Wow.
Okay, Trey Lyles.
I don't even see Trey on mine. Good for you.
3-point. And we've got the over 1.5. The number that I settled on, I think I'm going to do the Sabonis over 8.5 assists. And the Sabonis numbers are just broken. I think the numbers were 19, 13.5, and 8.5. We've talked about how Zubac does kind of give him problems, but I'm taking Mike Brown's words the other day to heart, and I think that the biggest way that they're going to try and massage those Malik Monk minutes that aren't going to be there is just Sabonis essentially creating himself and finding guys. And when De'Aaron isn't out there, just heavily leaning on that Sabonis dribble handoff, I'm hoping that leads to a couple more assists, and we've seen a couple 9-10 assist games from Sabonis this season, so I'm going to cross my fingers, but I'm going to say Sabonis gets 9 or more assists tonight.
9 or more.
Which would be quite something if De'Aaron's going to get 7.
That's
Sabonis
what I'm saying. So who's going to score? Can someone take Keegan over there?
Just gonna
somebody.
Pass. Just it's going to be like Mike.
Just
a
hot potato.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Also selfless.
All right. Ready to rock and roll then. Let's get it. Dog segment.
Doggy dog. Where are my dogs at? Come on. I think I'm gonna as well hop on this De'Aaron Fox train, and I'm gonna pick De'Aaron, and I do really like that assist number Again, looking at it here, Kings are 20-3 this season when De'Aaron Fox has 7 or more assists. 20-3. That seems like a really, really good number to try and hit. I think he's just going to do it all tonight. I think he's going to have 20, whatever. I think his line is at 26.5.
Yes.
I think he goes over on everything. I'm expecting a monster, monster, monster performance from De'Aaron Fox tonight.
Okay. We have Amid Rock on the Sack Chat. The Bench Mob is my dog. Next man up mentality.
We could use it. They struggled last game.
From Curtis Hicks. Davion is my dog. Feel you on that. From Manny Too Legit with Trey Lyles and Sasha Back. I still have a good feeling we can make it to the sixth seed. See, this is
six,
the energy.
Six.
This is the energy that we need. Simone, who's your dog?
Please let me adopt that Keegan
Murray. There you go. I would love to pick Keegan.
I would love to.
Keegan burned me a couple times.
He has.
But,
at least Kevin's no longer an option for you.
I can't Kevin mess up Kevin anymore. Right. And I'm gonna copy Curtis Hicks and also say Davion Mitchell.
Ooh.
I think Davion has really figured something out with his shot. He's shooting with a lot of confidence. And you know, we show up to the games pretty early to watch the guys and to get the vibe of the arena. And also Mike Brown's pregame presser. And the way the timing always lines up is Davion is basically doing his shoot around as I arrive. And it's butter, man. And he's working his tail off. And hopefully he can continue to see the fruits of his labor. Keon is in there around that time as well. So I'm going Davion Mitchell. And as far as just a full-on prediction for tonight, which we premiere sometimes, and a day like today, a night like tonight, you need it. I think the Kings take care of business and they get this one done, man. I think they get to
beautiful
about the one. To your point, Chris, missing some of that offensive firepower, I think it's about keeping the Clippers at bay. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe you're looking at a 111 to 108 or something.
Ooh,
like that.
Okay.
Something like that. Something light.
Low scoring? Okay.
There you go. There you go. All right. And there we go. It's time to go. Thank you for listening to Styles and Watkins. Thank you to all the callers that we had. Thank you to Simone, as always. Thank you to La Murray from The Athletic covering the Clippers. And up next, you have The Drive Guys with Whitey Gleason and Kyle Draper. Until tomorrow, secure the bag, light the Clippers beam.